More Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Welcome to Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios. Here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. It's a brand new year, and I am thrilled to bring in our first national guest of 2024. We're going to bring in Eric Kramer. I know you recognize the name. Played in the NFL going back to 1987, had multiple stops. Also had a very successful stint with the Chicago Bears and the Detroit Lions, and we're going to talk about his new book, The Ultimate Comeback, Surviving a Suicide Attempt, Conquering Depression, and Living with a Purpose. Eric, it is such a pleasure to get you on the show today. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Of course. Glad to be on. Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's start by talking about your career in general, and then we'll move into the book. I think your career path in general is a fascinating story because you weren't drafted by an NFL team, but you got to see some action going back to 1987 with the Atlanta Falcons. So you're part of that replacement player era, and then you went to the CFL, and then you came back to the NFL. I mean, it's a fascinating career trek, I think, in itself.
Yeah, well, true enough, and I'm glad, you know how people always say afterward, hey, if I had to look back and do it all over again, would I? And my answer is, yes, I would, but I was originally signed as an undrafted free agent from the New Orleans Saints and got cut there, was back in school at NC State, and then the strike happened, and so when, as you said, played for the Falcons, they kept me afterward, and but then the following year I got cut. On the last cut, and ended up in Canada, played there really for like six games, and then came back the next year, and we had an inter-squad scrimmage in which the head coach back then, Larry Koharik, made it live on everybody, meaning the quarterbacks, and in four snaps into the whole thing, I ended up blowing out a posterior cruciate ligament. So I really had nowhere else to go. And so I called around all the NFL teams, and the Lions were the only one to call me back. And so that's how that got started. And, had a good four-year run in Detroit, and then 5 years in Chicago. And my last one was with the Chargers back when they were in San Diego.
I have to ask you about being a quote-unquote replacement player, because I've always been fascinated about that season in the NFL. What was that like from a player's perspective, especially once the strike came to an end? Do you remember that process fairly well?
Somewhat. I mean, we're going back quite a ways, but I do remember that. So back then, the Falcons have moved complexes now, but back then it was in, I think, Suwannee or Duluth, Georgia, whatever. And so it was north of Atlanta, and there wasn't much there. And the person at the time, owner of the team, Rankin Smith, owned the whole complex. So it was not just the Falcons practice facility. It was also a hotel, motel, whatever. And that's where we stayed as players. And so I remember when everybody did come back, that I remember walking across the parking lot, and I had my little beat-up yellow VW Bug, and I there was nothing but Mercedes and Porsches in the parking lot, or so it seemed. So it was, you know, to, I think, more to your question, what was it like? I think it was a little frosty on my behalf, but the only regular player we had that crossed the picket line was Tim Green.
Okay.
And so Tim and I got to be good friends, and but it took a little while for everyone else to warm up. But that team had Tony Casillas on it, and Mike Ken was the left tackle. And he was also the union president on the player side. And so, yeah, it was a little frosty, to say the least. But, you know, eventually, you know, people warmed up. And I do remember Tony Casillas was on that team. And I remember, like, for the Super Bowl that year, I believe that was the Washington Redskins with Doug Williams winning that year. And I remember being over at Tony Casillas' house, And then later when I was with the Lions before the game, you know, he's calling me a scab in the papers and whatnot. And so, you know, I do remember having a pretty good game, that playoff game, and Barry Sanders actually turning him all around on the one run Barry had that day. So I think it was the only way I was going to play pro football was that strike. And I thought, you know, three games it'd be over. I mean, they didn't know how long it would take, but it lasted three games. And so I figured I'd be, you know, going back. So when I got called up to see, Marion Campbell was the head coach back then. When I got called up to see him, I thought I was getting cut like everyone else. And he said, no, you've done a pretty good job here. So we're going to keep you. So.
It kind of sets the stage, Eric, in the book. I found it fascinating how you caught on with the Detroit Lions, where you made a phone call literally to every NFL franchise, and you got two to even entertain the idea. It's almost as if you're calling around looking for a job, right? I think a lot of people can kind of relate to that. You're calling around, hey, do you have any job openings? You did this with NFL franchises, and it turned out to be worth your time because that's what got you a tryout with the Detroit Lions.
Right. That's very true. And it was only in writing this book that I found out from June Jones, who was a receiver coach back then. We had a guy at NC State, which is where I went, named Haywood Jeffries. And back then, June was the quarterback coach and offense coordinator at Houston Oilers. And they drafted Haywood in the first round. And so he's like, yeah, going back to then and even going back to the strike. He says, yeah, I thought you could play. And had I not written the book, I never would have called June. And it's actually, I called June because I was helping at a local junior college. And they had a guy there that was quarterback. He was a quarterback coach, but he had just finished playing in college, and I thought he could play. And so June at that time was coaching for the Seattle team of the, I guess it's XFL. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that's how that whole thing happened. And kind of crazy, but definitely worth a phone call, wasn't it?
No doubt. And then your time in Detroit, I thought, was very interesting as well, because here you go to a franchise, they end up drafting Andre Ware, they have Rodney Peete. I mean, this is a team I don't know what the word to use. I mean, Rodney Peete's a well-established veteran. They use a first-round draft pick on Andre Ware. But yeah, when we look at the history books, here we are, the Lions finally winning the division. Looks as if Jared Goff is going to put them in position to get a playoff win. You're the last quarterback to get a playoff win for the Detroit Lions.
As sad as that is correct. But I think the Lions, you know, are obviously on a very good path and have been now dating back to really last year. I remember calling up Chris Spielman, who worked for the team, and I think they were, I don't know, 1-3 or so at the time, but looking good doing it. And so I said, you know, how is it you guys are so good right now? And he goes, well, this coaching staff is ridiculous, meaning very good. And so, you know, this has kind of been coming for them now for a little bit. And obviously, Dan Campbell is been a great head coach, as have all of their assistants. So, you know, I think we can all appreciate, or at least I can appreciate, you know, I watched this Dallas game and how well both teams actually played. And so, you know, I've been very impressed so far.
Are you known for being the last quarterback to get a playoff win? Do people ever ask you about that, being the last one to win a playoff game in Detroit?
Only people from Detroit, right?
Okay.
there was a guy, I was literally at the gym, I don't know, a year ago or so, and I was talking to him about nothing, and I ended up having a Detroit T-shirt on, and it's old. It's got that 91, it's got the Detroit Lions logo on the front, and it has the roster of who was on that team. I think it was 91 or 93. I think it was 91. And so the season you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, what do you have to do with Detroit? And I go, well, I used to live there. And he says, oh, really? what years? And I said, I told him, and he says, did you used to play there? And I go, yeah. And he goes, what's your name? I said, Eric Kramer. And he goes, really? So I go, yeah. And but like I said, it takes somebody from Detroit to know that.
Again, our guest right now, Eric Kramer, former NFL quarterback. We're going to talk about the book, The Ultimate Comeback, Surviving a Suicide Attempt, Conquering Depression, and Living with a Purpose. Eric, I do want to talk about another story that's in the book during your time in Detroit where you gained the nickname Brass, and this has a direct correlation to Barry Sanders.
Right. So we're playing, I guess this was that same season in 91, and we're playing in Indianapolis, and Rodney was playing, and there I was a backup, and a punt was made that we punted to them, and I think the guy muffed the punt. I don't remember what yard line it was on, 25, 30 yard line or something. And so this was really my first non-strike game, and so I didn't think about it in those terms, though. And so we ran the run and shoot, and we had certain signals to run certain plays, and Willie Green out there was, I think, in his second year, and we had run, you know, Willie was one of those people I would stay, come before, after practice, and stay with, and we got pretty good at running this fade stop, and so I think, I don't know what order this happened, but I think it was, you know, hand off to Barry once, hand off to Barry twice, and I think we had a third and one. And Willie looks at me and gives me a little fade stop signal, and we call it and throw it and touchdown. And I remember running, jogging off the sideline, and Jerry Wampler, who was the line coach, he's like, you know, kind of chuckling with his hands on his knees. And I said, what? He goes, you take the ball out of Barry Sanders' hands on third and one? He goes, you could have been buying your own plane flight home. And so I get over to the bench to Willie, and I go, that was third down? So sometimes ignorance is bliss. So yeah, when I get on the bus to go back, all the linemen are sitting in the back already, and Ken Dalifor played guard, and he says, hey, Brass, get back here. So sat back there, and that's how that nickname was born.
Again, we're being joined right now by former NFL quarterback Eric Kramer. We're talking about his career right now. We've got to pause for just a moment. Eric's going to join us for another segment. When we return, we're going to talk about life after football, surviving a suicide attempt, and conquering depression. That's coming up next. Again, we're being joined right now by former NFL quarterback Eric Kramer right here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Welcome back into Drive Time Sports. Live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're going to continue the conversation with our guest right now, former NFL quarterback Eric Kramer. During the last segment, we talked a bit about his career. Eric, after Detroit, you move on to Chicago. I know you have some years there, five seasons there, a couple of seasons as a full-time starter. Then you go on to San Diego. I think this is a perfect place to actually start talking about a lot of the stories in the book. The idea of being an NFL football player, and a lot of people would think, hey, this is a glamorous life. You got this dream job. But you're still a human being, and you're playing with depression. You're dealing with depression. This is a good place, right? This would be a fair place to start talking about that and how it affected not only your career, but you as a human being.
Yeah. So you're right. Life does have a way of following you around wherever you go, no matter what you're doing. And when I went to the Lions, as I kind of told you before, I didn't even start in high school quarterback on varsity. I mean, I did as a 10th grader JV, but I got, you know, hurt, I don't know, three or four games into the season with a broken collarbone. So that season was over. Then I was a backup as a junior. I switched schools as a senior. Didn't start a quarterback then, even though I went out for it. And then, you know, went to junior college route. But even at NC State, you know, they recruited two other California junior college quarterbacks. And so this was kind of the first time where the Bears said, hey, we want you to be the guy. Even the Lions didn't do that. So So, yeah, I remember going there, and literally Dave Wannstedt and Ron Turner picked me up at the airport. Ron was off as the coordinator, and he was at Pitt, actually 10 years prior, recruiting me there. And so, anyway, things got off to a good start, but then we, you know, I played okay that first few games and then got hurt with a shoulder separation. And I came back, and I think I might have played one more game, but then I think we lost. And then Steve Walsh was playing the rest of the year. And so that was tough in a sense that I wasn't doing what I was paid to go there and do anymore. And part of me felt guilty about that. And eventually I had no association with depression whatsoever until, wham, I couldn't get out of bed one day and didn't want to get out of bed. And so then it was hard to go in every day feeling like I was not a part of what was happening. And I don't know that there's a direct correlation, but it certainly couldn't have helped. And so literally getting up was a chore. Getting out of bed, followed by going to, you know, getting dressed and leaving, but none of it felt good. And so having to do that while everybody else is enjoying the season is tough. And then it went away. I believe I started taking some antidepressant medication for it, but that doesn't really, like, help right away. And so it's, you know, a good 4, 6, 7, 8 weeks down the road. But eventually it helps lift you out. And then it went away. And so, speaking of depression again, we had probably statistically anyway, one of the best years, or maybe the best year any Bears quarterback ever had. And, but then after that season, got depressed again. So here you go. Like you said, you're thinking you're living this fairy tale land. Well, there really isn't one. And, so, yeah, it just, I'd say I suffered bouts of depression a good maybe 6 or 7 times, not necessarily at all related to football, just because. And no really rhyme or reason for it. That's just sometimes that's the way life goes. And it's good to have a support system around you, so that you're not going through this yourself. What I did find is that when you are your own counsel, which is oftentimes what happens when someone's already depressed, you're your own worst counsel. So, you know, the idea there is to not let that happen. The idea is to build your own sort of home team before that happens. People you can go to in good and not so good times, and that, you know, are observant. Like, it takes you to be observant of other people and how they either do or don't listen or sound like a good look, appear to be a good sounding board for others. Then they look approachable. And that could be 1, 2, 3 friends. It could be a therapist. It doesn't matter. As long as you have your own support system that can travel with you, whether it be a phone call or otherwise, that's a good way to sort of avoid this for me ever happening to begin with, whether it be anxiety, depression, anything like that.
Again, our guest right now, Eric Kramer, former NFL quarterback, and we are talking about his book, The Ultimate Comeback, Surviving a Suicide Attempt, Conquering Depression, and Living with a Purpose. One of the things that I appreciate so much about this book, Eric, is the fact that it shows the human side of an NFL quarterback, and everybody wants to relate to an NFL quarterback, right? There's that instant connection with the mass, and so for you to step up and tell this story, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. If we jump ahead and we go back to 2011 in the book, this is where things this is where the book becomes, I don't want to say darker, but this is where the book kind of changes a little bit. And I think that this is a place that a lot of people are going to be able to connect with you, because we have all had trials and tribulations and really unfortunate things happen in our life. And we get to read that in this story at around that time mark.
Yeah, and there was back then, you know, I've heard it said. I think I was watching Sylvester Stallone documentary, and he's like, you know, right up until 40, life is addition. After that time period, it becomes subtraction. And so the subtraction in my life came when I have a, had a son, Griffin, who lost his battle with addiction. And so he was, at the time he overdosed, it was, he was a senior in high school and had been out of, he'd first, as a 10th grader, gone into treatment in an inpatient program. For about 3 months, and then he transitioned to living at home, but as an outpatient, was pretty much gone all day. I'd drive him to drop him off, and you know, eventually they had school, was kind of one-on-one school, and everything went at a very slowed-down pace, and then I could see toward the end of his, it was almost for him like a finish line. So I want to say the outpatient program ended in 2011. I want to say around, you know, February, March, something like that. And his demeanor went from, hey, thank you for getting me into rehab, because otherwise I would have been, you know, in jail or dead, to, oh, that was brainwashing. And I thought, oh, no. And it wasn't long after, in October, where, you know, he started, you know, had won basically, from what I gather, it was one time he did heroin. And the problem with that, and this is not a, this is a common theme, is that people who stop for a while and then go back, they go back at the same dose they had been doing before. And so, yeah, that was a tragic day that I'll never forget, receiving a phone call from the sheriff's department. And it, that I took a tumble there for a while. And then my mom had already been diagnosed the day after Mother's Day, that same year, with stage 4 uterine cancer. And so she had a battle. And then was out of it, sort of, in remission, and then the cancer came back. And so in July, following Griffin's passing, which was about 8 months later, she passed away. And then around the time she passed away, my dad had some untreated acid reflux that then turned into esophageal cancer. So even though he didn't die right away, it was, he did die about 3 years later. And so that was a tough time in life. And like, again, it was the subtraction of life. And Dylan wasn't living with me at the time, which is my other younger son. And, yeah, it just was a not good time. And so I did what seemed to me, again, the wrong person to counsel myself, seemed to me that the best way for me to not only get me out of this, but become not a burden to anyone else. Well, I wasn't a burden to anyone else, but my perspective told me I was. And so I then went about the process of purchasing and getting a gun and, you know, shooting myself. And I am a I'm not regretful of it, but I'm thankful that I did survive. And so here I am now, living a life of the person. It's the title of the book's The Ultimate Comeback, because I have the ultimate second chance.
Again, our guest, Eric Kramer, former NFL quarterback, talking about his life and the ultimate comeback. Eric, when you survive something as traumatic as a suicide attempt, how long does it really take for you to say, okay, I can be an inspiration to others to maybe help not get to help them maybe not get to the point that I was at? I mean, at what point in time do you kind of work up the courage? Because that's got to be a huge step.
Well, I don't think, me personally, I did not go about it thinking, what can I do to inspire others? What I did was eventually came to, because there's 2 or 3 years that went by that I don't really have recollection of. And it was probably, I don't know, it was about, what year are we in now, 2023? This is probably about 3 or 4 years ago. A friend of mine who I played with in college lives in Henderson, Nevada. He's a athletic director and head football coach at a high school there. And he had gone through some personal issues, meaning his older brother had passed away unexpectedly from cancer. His mother passed away, and he's from Charlotte himself. And the reason he moved out to Henderson, Nevada, was because that's where his then wife was from. So they had a couple kids who are now fully grown. And he was kind of disillusioned at the school he was coaching at because they didn't have any athletic facilities. And anyway, he's doing fine now. But I remember going out there for probably, a good 6 weeks, about, every weekend, and just to kind of check on him. And I remember calling back to somebody named Tim Thane, who Tim runs and did run one of those transition home programs from a wilderness program where Griffin was. And it was very much based on the solution talk model, which is maybe, if you haven't heard of it, it's kind of looking for the good in everybody. It's building your relationship with somebody through what they do positively already. And you help to reinforce that by pointing out all the great things, even if it's only one, that they're doing. And so I got a hold of Tim, and I said, Tim, would you like to put something together with me? And he was like, sure. So what that turned out to be and is turning out to be is something called Mental Health Touchdown. And it's going to be working with, or we are going to be working with kids and families starting at a young age, like fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade, as an after-school program. And so picture, kids at that age learning how to identify positive characteristics that they like in people, hopefully themselves too. But what does being a good friend mean in grade 4 and 5? Telling the truth or having your friends back in some capacity. All of these things can be acted out. And that's where a woman named Catherine Kasmer comes in. She's worked with kids in schools and has a improv background. And so that's what this program's going to be. And can you imagine if you're age 4, 5, and in grades 4, 5, and 6, and you build a home team of support around you based on the characteristics of those people, what that will look like when you're age, 16, 17, 18. And you'll have, for the better part of your life, not only will you have your own home team, hopefully you'll have earned your way on someone else's. And that will go with you through life. And so, having your parents involved, and that's kind of what that program's about. So, and it all came from basically me going out to hang out for weekends at a time with a friend of mine.
It truly is a remarkable story, Eric, and I'm taking so much away from the book. I know that at some point in time, everyone is going to be affected by suicide in some form or another. And so I've thoroughly enjoyed this story. I've thoroughly enjoyed the book, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation that you and I have had over the last 30 minutes. I think we've touched on a lot of different aspects, focusing on your career, but also getting the message of the book across. I think it's phenomenal.
Well, I appreciate that. And it has been, really, this stuff has taken place over several years, right? I mean, so this book, to me, is a way to keep not only Griffin, but Dylan, It's kind of wrote it for them, co-wrote it, actually. So Bill Croyle gets a lot of the credit because he's, man, what an amazing guy he's been through this whole experience. And, you know, getting to kind of keep Griffin's flame ablaze, so to speak, Dylan as well, and being able to be helpful to others. Because, like I said, when I've, well, I didn't say this, but I've spoken to, you know, a company back in Chicago not long ago, and the subject matter, it's almost like they could care less about the book, but the subject matter is what's important. Not that they couldn't care about the book, but the topics of are universal. And it, not that necessarily you've tried to commit suicide, but typically everybody's either had or connected to somebody who's been depressed. Guaranteed.
Definitely. Definitely. Eric, before I let you go, again, the name of the book, The Ultimate Comeback, Surviving a Suicide Attempt, Conquering Depression, and Living with a Purpose. It is available right now. I highly recommend it. But how else can fans and those interested continue to connect with you? I know that you are available on social media.
Yep, EK, at EK Pass. So with X, with obviously once Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And so, yeah, I post some things from time to time, but you can always reach out and find me there as well.
Eric, thank you so much for taking out the time. Again, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Loved going back over the aspects of your career. But again, talking about the surviving of a suicide attempt and how to put together a home team. Thank you so much for spending the last 30 minutes or so with us.
Great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Excellent conversation with Eric Kramer, former NFL quarterback. Again, the book is called The Ultimate Comeback, Surviving a Suicide Attempt, Conquering Depression, and Living with a Purpose. We've got to pause for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Back in just a moment.